From the team at CTS, this is the Time Crunch Cyclist Podcast, our show dedicated to answering your training questions and providing actionable advice to help you improve your performance, even if you're strapped for time. I'm your host, Coach Adam Pulford, and I'm one of the over 50 professional coaches who make up the team at CTS. In each episode, I draw on our team's collective knowledge, other coaches, and experts in the field to provide you with the practical ways to get the most out of your training and ultimately become the best cyclist that you can be. Now, on to our show. Welcome back, Time Crunch fans. I'm your host, Coach Adam Pulford. We're here again today to develop the case for good pedaling and why we need to develop a wide range of cadences. I'm alongside good friend and fellow CTS coach, Charlie Livermore, to help discuss and elucidate further on the topic. Charlie, welcome back.
All right. Good to be back, man. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, when we talk anything bikes, you generally get pretty stoked about it. But cadence in particular is a passion project for yours. So I'm super excited to have you back on. Before we get into telling our audience of how to develop the wide range of cadences, can you do a quick recap of what we discussed last week in the previous episode where we talked about pedaling technique?
Yeah, I think what we covered, the important parts that we covered last week was, you know, we talked about the duty cycle. I mean, in the end, the duty, you know, increasing your duty cycle is going to make you a more efficient pedaler. And so increasing your duty cycle, we talked about how the pedal stroke is so posterior muscle chain centric. It's a lot with the back of the leg, and not to think just the quads. Quads are definitely part of it, but not the whole part. So we talked about, you know, all the muscles and how they interact around the pedal stroke. And then we talked about, you know, how to kind of control your lever and think about pedaling from the hips, how to control that lever, and then how to practice it, you know, from, you know, trying to practice that synchronization. Because if you get the synchronization right, you're going to get the rest of the pedal stroke really well. I mean, most people are already pedaling really well through 2 to 4. You know, from 1 to 5 or whatever you say.
It's a great recap. And today what we're going to do is focus specifically on how to train different cadences, high and low. But where I want to start is also a little bit of what we talked about last week with, you said practice this technique on your endurance rides at your freely chosen cadence. And I think...
Yes.
That is a very important element for everyone to listen to, because it is still choosing your cadence, whatever feels the best for most of the intervals and most of the riding. That cadence is what we want. We don't want to necessarily change that number or have that like so ingrained, but what we're going to talk about is training high and low cadences may influence that slightly and for the positive.
That's right. Another way to think about it is that the training, the cadence is basically the goal is going to be to, if your regular chosen cadence is really slow, which a lot of, you know, amateur athletes, they generally pedal really, you know, low cadences and they have a harder time at high cadences. Your naturally selected cadence will become higher if you train it, but you always want to be in your naturally selected cadence, like what you feel comfortable doing when you're doing workouts and things. The purpose of the training of the cadence is to increase your cadence at that natural selected cadence when it's applicable.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah. Now to put some numbers behind this, because I do want to like throw out some concrete stuff as opposed to the abstract. I'd say once I've worked, like where I start with an athlete is I just observe where their cadence are at. For both field tests and regular training, if I see anything to adjust, I'll then start to adjust. But once we do get into good training, I'd say most people are going to be between 80 and 100 RPMs on average. So this is kind of like the bell curve of, am I doing pedaling properly from a cadence standpoint? That's a good range to start with.
Yeah. agree. Yeah.
Okay. So other cadence ranges, and I'm going to throw these out because this is what I use as a general guide, and we'll see if Charlie agrees, disagrees, or has anything else to say. But general cadence ranges for really steep hill climbs, I think, 60 to 70, somewhere in there for like steep stuff, 15, 20 upward percent. That's fine. That's a little low, but fine. We'll talk about some nuances there. 70 to 90 RPMs, that would be for like longer distance sort of cycling, long hill climbs, that sort of thing. 90 to 100 RPMs, ideal for group rides and races. And 100 to 120, that's more ideal for sprinting. So those are the ranges that I kind of use as a categorize what I'm doing with an athlete. Would you mostly agree with that, Charlie?
Yeah. You think about it, if you're going up a 14 or 15% grade and you're able to, if you have the gearing to do 80 to 90 RPMs, you're going to be super inefficient because one revolution is going to move you an inch. And so it gets to a point where if you can do 60 to 70 RPMs on a really steep hill, that's great. I think those ranges are really good and they're big enough to kind of like fit most cyclists in there. It's like the better cyclists that have better pedal strokes are going to be able to continue doing a higher, maybe a little bit in that 70 and 90. They'll be more into, and then, others will be in that 70, but it's all, I would say acceptable ranges. Yeah.
And I would say what would be unacceptable then, or like, I would say it's unacceptable because it's inefficient, is if you're doing a bunch of hill climbs or a bunch of riding at 40 to 50 RPMs, it's a little bonkers. Like there's no science I've ever seen. There's no practical application that says that is worthwhile. Meanwhile, maybe some elite track racers, things like this, will have cadences that are, 130 plus for some sprinting. And there's some drills actually that if I remember to talk about it, there's some fun drills that I work with my athletes where we'll go above that. But from a racing and performance standpoint, not so much for the majority of our listeners. We don't need to be really going above 120-ish. Yeah. So how do we train different cadences, Charlie? Where do you want to start on this?
I guess that depends.
Yeah. Well,
that depends on each athlete, right? I mean,
yeah.
As far as, workouts, let's say, when we talked about, a good, really good pedal stroke and stuff, one of the things I like to kind of find out is, at what point, with my athletes, at what point do they start to, let's say, bounce around in the saddle? You've probably worked with an athlete, say, okay, go 20 revolutions per minute above your selected cadence. And some of them will do it, no problem. And then you say, go 30. And then at 30, they'll start bouncing. And that might be at 105, 110 RPMs. That's kind of a what I call a threshold. And so I try to identify that. And then one of the, we talked about how do you know if you're doing better? And it's like, it's increasing that threshold. And yeah. And the nice thing about, high cadence drills is, and the human body is that neuromuscularly, your body learns so fast.
Yeah. Real quick.
It's like, it's so quick how fast you adapt neurologically. Unlike when we're trying to, metabolically change, an athlete, that takes, it could take months, years, to do it. But that's a great thing about this. And so these higher cadence drills or different types of drills to get you to actually be better pedaler, I think happens at the threshold, because to improve that threshold, you've got to become a better pedaler.
Oh, I fully agree with that. And I would start with high cadence for most individuals. And the drills that I use, we call them fast pedals at CTS. Those are the actual interval prescriptions that we use. And I'll identify somebody's threshold cadence. There's a way to do that using WKO5 software. And then I typically will then prescribe the cadence to go above that, which is like, probably 10, 15, 20, RPMs higher than their normal identified threshold cadence. But what I tell them to do, and so here's a good example of a key workout and how I describe it, is I'll give them 8 by 2 minutes fast pedal at 100 to 120 RPMs with 2 minute recovery in between. But I want that interval power to be tempo or below. I don't really care what the power is as long as it's lower than tempo, because I don't want to go over threshold power because that starts to change the workout. Okay. And that, and if we focus on cadence only, that's going to develop the neurological adaptation that Charlie's talking about, because it's high speed or high velocity. And what I tell them to do is build up to that cadence to the point where you're bouncing in the saddle, and then back it down 2 or 3 RPM and hold it. That's the workout that I describe for every one of my athletes. Now you can play with the interval durations, 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute even. Yeah. But that's how to get there for a fast pedal, high cadence workout.
Yep.
Now the neuromuscular adaptation, the reason why that it goes so quickly is we talked about it in a couple other podcasts ago with velocity based training, is because it's a nerve muscle adaptation. It's not the metabolic of more mitochondrial development or vascularity. This is a very different sort of adaptation.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so many cool, like the workouts around cadence, you know, there's so many you can do. You can play around with it.
Tons of
You know, again, I think in the last episode, I talked about practicing the pedal stroke when you're doing the zone two stuff, you mm-hmm. know, like, and especially indoors. And so I do these low, high cadence. So you're going to, you know, 60 minutes where, you know, you're going to kind of like toggle between a self-selected cadence, not a low cadence, a self-selected, and then some, you know, 10, 20 RPMs above that. And that's very customer, you know, for each athlete, yeah. right? So some yeah. it'll be 10, it'll be, and some will be 20. So, you know, that's very individual. And then just keep toggling through. And one of the nice things about a workout like that is that it's kind of like the way, you're sitting in the pack and you're like faster cadence to accelerate as the pack is moving and slower and faster, you know, and you're going back and forth, back and forth. And I find my athletes love it because the time goes by much mm-hmm. better than just sitting there, doing, you know, zone two for an hour and a half on the bike, you know, and yeah. 2 hours or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And that's like the side benefit of it, Charlie, is like, it's because I'm not going to give my athletes busy work. I'm not that type of coach, but if I give them something, I want to make sure that it checks in like several boxes. One, is it going to give them benefit? Yes. Two, yeah. especially this time of year, we're recording in late January, early February. Is it going to incur and motivate them because there's like more than one thing going on? And then three, does it provide some entertainment value, right? On, off, you know, which exactly. fast pedal yeah. workout like that does. For our audience, I gave you one example workout and so did Charlie. I would say to pattern this over time, a couple of things I look for is, if you want to improve your cadence and overload that neurological or neuromuscular system, I would encourage you to do a workout like that probably twice a week and have enough time in zone. That is my threshold for that would be a total time in zone of 15 minutes or more per workout session. So 8x2, that's 16 minutes total. And that generally overloads. Now there's a couple ways, like say that you're very new at high cadence. If you're just falling apart halfway through that work set and you're just like, I can't, like I'm all, my hips are bouncing, you're done. Like that's enough. Now just ride endurance because you've overloaded the system and that's what we're looking for. Conversely, if you're if you're a very good pedaler and 8x2, you're like, that wasn't too much. Well, now go up to like a 7x3, right? And try to overload to that point where you have some that fatigue occurring. And that's what we want to see.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like the same thing that we do with, with threshold stuff, you know, do we extend it or do we intensify it? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's with cadence, it's kind of be the same thing, you know, you want to extend the time, yeah. you know, at this one. And then once you get to a certain time, okay, maybe let's go another 5 RPMs and we'll bring it back and we'll train you to do that. And really what is amazing is that in the end, when you start to have success with that as an athlete, all of a sudden you see that you're in your workouts, the trend is that they start, the self-selected cadence starts to go up in these workouts. And that's something that is so measurable and is so motivating for them, you know, to see that progression and especially because it happens so quickly.
That's it entirely. And I think too, I'll double down on high cadence. Like if I'm going to err on having a slightly higher cadence or a slightly lower cadence, I will go higher simply for all the reasons that we talked about prior to in the way of performance, group ride, how to in things like this, but also that practical application of if I need to bridge a gap or if I need to sprint over a small hill, am I going to do that at 60 RPMs comfortably? Or am I going to do that more comfortably at 90 RPMs or higher, whatever? It's at higher. So the practical application here is having the ability to spin a little bit higher is going to give you better performance. And that's why I start with high cadence intervals for a lot of my athletes. And we're starting here on this podcast. Finally, for our audience members, if you want to hear a little bit more of how to model this out, say over a month or something, I did a podcast about this called block training. I don't remember the episode number, but I described what block training is, how to deploy it into a program. And I used the example of high cadence or VO2 endurance is what I called it. And I used some calendars and stuff like that. So if you check out block training in Time Crunch Cyclist for a little bit more of how to build that out over time. We'll put a pin in high cadence work for right now, Charlie. But now let's swing to the other end of the pendulum, which is low cadence drills. Do you use that in your coaching for athletes, and what does a workout look like for low cadence work?
I call them muscle tension intervals, muscle tension, slow frequency, repetitions. And I use those a lot. I prescribe a lot of strength training in this part of the season. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like use it in conjunction with part of the strength training. I personally don't believe that slow frequency repetitions or muscle tensions doesn't develop more strength. I think the developing more strength happens in the gym. But what it does is it recruits more muscle. I think it helps with eventually with, muscle endurance, fatigue, but mostly it's a muscle recruitment part. And again, using it and using the right pedal stroke, you'll notice that if you're really doing SFRs or muscle tension intervals, well, you're really recruiting the glutes and, all the muscles that we talked about in episode one throughout the pedal stroke. And the nice thing about that slow repetitions is that it's easier to actually practice that beautiful pedal stroke. Mm-hmm. Because you have more time through the pedal stroke to kind of like feel the muscles interact and kind of go through it and, and kind of adjust and, the circle and, adjust where you're sitting in the saddle, and just get yourself in there. But yeah, I definitely do prescribe muscle tension intervals. It's one of the favorite, almost for all cyclists and me included. It's one of the most favorite kind of workouts because, you don't do them on a threshold. You might do them at tempo. You need enough watts, right?
You can't recover.
To have muscle tension.
Yeah.
And then, what is the right RPM? And that's a question for that because, some people say 40, some people say 50, some people say 60 RPMs. And I would say that the cadence number, 40, 50, 60, is really dependent on the threshold of the athlete. If your athlete is doing 250 watts at, zone three and tempo, 250 watts, 40 RPMs might be a little bit on the low side. So maybe a little higher. But again, it's so individual what the number is. But the idea is really to feel a lot of muscle tension throughout the pedal stroke.
And I will probably catch some grief from listeners and people when I say low cadence intervals do not do what a lot of people think it does, which I agree with you, Charlie. It doesn't. It's not strength training on the bike. It doesn't do more than a back squat or a vertical jump or some of these things that actually develop strength off the bike. And then as we do strength training in the gym and keep on riding our bike, that strength will translate over to the bike. So if you're doing low cadence work thinking that it's going to give you huge quads and this massive amount of strength, you're wrong. Full stop.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's fairly confusing because a lot of coaches and athletes will use a lot more low cadence work probably than I do, but I still prescribe it because I think it's really beneficial, especially in the way of feeling the pedal stroke and a lot of the technique stuff that we talked about, that Charlie described in the part one of this little series here, because having an even tension on the pedal stroke throughout, great. Starting a little sooner, great. And you need some load to do that. And usually slowing it down for riders is a great way to do it because they can feel it in real time.
Yeah.
So that's a really good way to start that technique. Yeah. Like a key muscle tension workout that I give would probably be something like warm up. And I usually throw in a little bit of fast pedal work, just like warm up, get the legs going. And then I'll drop the cadence down and I'll do like 3x5 or 4x5 muscle tensions with 3 minutes in between. If it's a fairly new rider, just to see how they respond to it. And I'll start with around 60 RPMs plus or minus five. And if that's too low, if they're like, "Ooh, I was really bogged down," I'll just increase it a little bit. If they're like, "Yeah, no problem," I'll go down a little bit. The consequences aren't too high or anything on this because it doesn't cause any damage. But I do keep the power tempo or below. I'm not going threshold and above. There's some muscle benefit that goes on with it. But in particular, my last thing on low cadence is I do it early season and then I do it for specificity later on. And this is where I've failed as a coach before. If I've got riders going down to like Central America, they're doing like La Ruta, they're riding Bogota or something like this, and they haven't seen 50 or 60 RPMs at load in a while, they'll go down, do these events, it's hot, really different muscle recruitment patterns, and they'll start cramping. So it's also a specificity thing that I'll incorporate into training.
Another application that I like for low cadence, because we talked about a good cadence is, like say if you're doing an endurance ride, a good cadence is 80 to 100 RPMs. I think that's what you had said. And sometimes when I'm doing these kind of high zone two, a little bit of like, maybe tempo or something like that, I'll actually have the riders do a bunch of work at 70 RPMs and stuff instead of 80. And it's not a huge amount of more force, but it's enough to cause that muscle fatigue. And you just nailed it. Cyclists get cramps all the time and they don't realize that cramps can be caused by hydration. It can be a hydration thing, right? Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's just muscle fatigue. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like your muscles just fatigue and they're just not working anymore, And so if you're doing it in an event and you're in that event, you're going to be putting out this many newton meters because you're going to be going a lot faster. Well, you can't really go that fast in training all the time. How do you put that strain, that stress on the muscles in an endurance ride or in a tempo ride? You just bring down the cadence a little bit and then you have kind of almost the same force that you would at 100 RPMs when you're doing 300 watts, let's say.
I'm glad you brought that up because where my brain was going on that is like, and I do kind of finagle with cadences on some of these long tempo days. I even call it like fatigue resistance training where you're kind of being very silly and inefficient with your effort because you're just like drop the cadence a little bit and go zone three, maybe sweet spot, and just like see how long you can do it. And it's very taxing. It's annoyingly tiresome. But it is great because if you get into a situation where you haven't been before, fatigue and cramping occurs. And this, playing with cadence and playing with kind of durations of stuff, that's what we're taught. We're just changing it so that you don't have a weak spot. That's really what we're talking about.
It's really interesting because when you're training, the difference between training and let's say going on a hard group ride where you want to do well in the group ride, you want to stay in the front group, that's kind of like, I consider that more racing, although it's not a real race. And then you have racing. Mm-hmm. In training, you're going to be doing a lot of things that you would not want to do when you're racing, right? Because you're doing it for adaptations. You're doing it, to get you ready for training. So, you don't want to be sitting in the pack at 70 RPMs when you're at a certain power output, a certain intensity, because that's really going to fatigue you more. But in training, it prepares you for the racing. And so, you know, that's one thing that I always get very clear with my athletes. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff in training that I never want you to do when you're racing or when you're, you know, in a group ride, when you're competing. Let's just call it competing.
Competing.
Yeah. And there's a big difference there.
Well, there's a huge difference. The reason I was laughing, Charlie, is because I don't think I've ever said this on the podcast, but one thing I tell my athletes all the time is training is the exact opposite of racing or competing, if you want to use that term. Because in training, we're trying to get as tired as possible. We're doing inefficient things to get tired, then we rest, and then we get better. Whereas in racing or competing, we're trying to go as fast as possible and be as efficient as possible, not waste energy. Yeah. In training, we're just wasting energy as all day long because we just want to get tired. That's the point of training.
Yeah.
But do it in, I say that kind of like blanket statement. I mean, we're being intentional about it so that the adaptations we do gain contribute to performance outcomes in the race. But yes, the dilemma between the two or the contrast between the two is pretty interesting when you think about it that way.
It really is. You know, speaking of cadence and when's the right time to use different cadences. And I think we talked a little bit about this in the first podcast is like, when you're competing, like what you said, Adam, you know, you want to try as much as you can to induce as least amount of fatigue as possible and to do everything you can to kind of conserve, you know, fatigue and energy. And so, you know, you definitely don't want to be sitting in the pack at, you know, 100 RPMs when you could be pedaling 80 RPMs and just like resting your legs on the pedals and, you know, the draft is taking you and you're only making, you know, you're at 65% of threshold, you know, and you're just kind of cruising along. If you're spinning, you know, your high cadence, you might look good, but you're spending a lot of energy there for no good reason. And then vice versa, when it's really hard, you want the high cadence to reduce the, you know, the muscle fatigue and the torque on the muscles. So that's why in the end, having a really high range of cadence and training the, you know, your cadences, the low cadence, the middle cadence that we talked about, and then the high cadences. So you have like a, you know, a tool bag full of different cadences that you can just switch on anytime in the context of, you know, cadence and pedaling.
That's right. And I think, you know, as we swing back to high cadence, another key interval that I use often or at the right times, you got to be careful with it, but like power intervals, which are high cadence and high power output. I'll typically do VO2 max intervals with this. And how I kind of deploy it is, again, I would say it's very similar to a pattern of the fast pedals where let's just use 8x2 once again, 8x2 minutes on with 2 minutes in between. I sometimes will increase that out to 3 or 4 minutes in order to get the power that I want out of the athlete with the cadence that I want. And so we're going like zone 5 and above for a power output. Okay. So for a lot of people listening, that's 106% up to maybe 130% somewhere in there. And the cadence that I want, again, I go back to whatever their threshold cadence is and I add on maybe 10, 15, make sure they're not bouncing in the saddle. Typically for many athletes, it's going to be 100 to 120. So high cadence, high power. If the power is dipping, I say keep the cadence and keep going because I want that high power, high cadence. Because that, to me, probably develops the best cadence out there. Because you're
cadence under load. Yeah.
Cadence under load. Yeah. Because it gets back to what Charlie and I were talking about in part one, where it forces you to start the duty cycle earlier and continue it a little later and produce power, you know, a lot of power in all the right places. And I would say if anybody has the need to improve their pedaling technique, high cadence and high power is the way. That would be my takeaway from these two podcasts, in my opinion.
Absolutely right. And in fact, as a matter of fact, that, you know, once you start to break through into, and, you know, being able to like move your legs that fast, eventually you have to do more power.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a time where the force is so low because your cadence is so high that you're like pedaling in the air. And one of the, back when I had a brick and mortar training center in Northern California, You know, I would demonstrate this by having people take their feet out of the pedals and, you know, sit in their position and pedal in the air and see how easy that is. It's like nobody could do it for more than 10, 20 seconds. I went, well, yeah. Look, there's no power. There's no nothing. In the end, your pedals are a point of support, you know, in the three points of your support in the bike, the hands, the seat, and the pedals. And if you lose that support completely in the pedals, it becomes very, very difficult to, you know, to have a good high cadence.
This brings up and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but there's a couple like fun things that I do when I'm working with athletes, like face to face. And we did this with the BMX team back in the day. This is like a peak high cadence. Like, what is the highest RPM that you can produce? And by the way, that's an athlete that produces really high cadence and has a beautiful pedal stroke, BMX riders.
Yeah.
And so how we do this was on geared bikes, and people can try this. But I would work some high cadence drills in before, but, we get them going on like a slight downhill, pedaling at like normal cadence and tempo or slightly higher power. So like pedaling on the downhill, and going up and kind of building that to VO2 with high cadence for that load. And then what we do is blow the whistle, whatever, indicate to them, and then have them drop their cassette and keep spinning. And what that does, and you can only do it for maybe 5, 10, maybe 15 seconds, but what that does is it drives that leg speed up way higher than you would ever do on your own. And we would see, 200 plus RPMs coming out of that. That's how we develop it. And I do that with some of my riders now, some of my pro riders, and I'll even compete with them and be like, okay, if you can get a higher RPM than me, I'm going to give you a free day on Training Peaks, or I'll ship you out a CTS shirt or something like that. But it is pretty fun, because then you start to gamify and see how high can my peak cadence be. And there's some benefit that goes on in that. But that's kind of like, that's one fun drill to do. But yeah, high cadence is the way. And I think I would be dismissed to also say sprint, like practice sprinting. And I don't care if you're just like doing group rides, if you're just doing fitness, sprinting is a great way to get fit. Sprinting is a great way to bring out your performance, and sprint at high RPMs, sprint out of the saddle, sprint in the saddle. And if you can develop that skill and technique, because there's a ton of other like coordination that goes on in a good sprint. We probably don't have, I mean, we could do a whole podcast in itself, but I just want to mention it right now.
I agree with that. Definitely. Absolutely. Sprinting out of the saddle. Now we're talking another animal and how to do that and, you know, do that really well. But, you know, the best way to learn it is to do it, kind of like the high cadence is like find your threshold when you're sprinting out of the saddle, you know, on a similar terrain, you know, whatever grade it is, your max power, and just try to increase your leg speed at that, you know, that at that same gear. The body figures out how to do it, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. It just figures out how to do it if you do it often enough.
Yeah. And I would say don't overthink it. Go out, like Charlie said, go out and sprint. Try it. Try it both ways, in the saddle, out of the saddle, down in the drops, in the hoods, and you'll get better. The other thing, do hill, like town sprints. I always throw that win in around here on group rides. And some people know what's up, some people don't. But like, that's another way to just weave in. And what you're doing is you're doing a group ride. You're coming up to a little small town. I'm out here in kind of the DMV region, DC, Maryland, and Virginia. And we run through a small town. We just sprint for the town sign. Arbitrary sprint, but you start racking points up mentally, and it's super fun. But that's one way to incorporate sprints into a fun day.
I think that's why, you know, Europeans are better sprinters than Americans, because they have so many more town signs. Mm-hmm. You know, on a group ride, right? We have like, you know, we won't see many town signs. You go in Europe, you're like, you know, there's a town sign going into the town. There's a town sign going out of the town. Then there's another one like, you know, 5K away. You're sprinting all day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, like silly, but effective way of doing it. Well, so Charlie, like we've talked about what to focus on with some of these drills, both high cadence, low cadence. What should we not focus on? What's some of the stuff that you hear out there or you see athletes doing that they just shouldn't be doing if they want to improve their cadence?
there's some drills that are kind of, you know, old school, and I don't think they really work. You know, single-legged pedaling, for example, drills. You know, they that was always kind of, you know, a thing. I used to use them. You know, back in
the
days.
I did too.
Okay, you know, so we didn't know. and then I started realizing that I was blowing my hip flexors out. And so there's a couple of things that you don't really, you know, single-legged pedaling drills don't really work that well. I mean, they work okay in the half moon, but after that, you know, it's like, you know, stop. I've never used the power pedals. Remember the power pedals? That
power cranks.
Each power cranks. Mm-hmm. Each, you know, I don't understand, you know, I guess that's why they never took off. And I think people really, you know, finally figured out that lifting that pedal, you know, and trying to, you know, make something, you know, around the backside is not that great.
Yeah. For anybody who's curious, you can Google power cranks and see it, but they're like independent cranks. If they just are sitting there, they're at the bottom. And then what they train you to, you'd have to pedal through. But yeah, don't get them. Yeah. But if you're curious, go look. But Charlie, to the point, one leg or single leg pedal drills. I think the best way to describe this is, remember how doctors used to prescribe cigarettes to open up the lungs, saying that it was healthy? It's adjacent to that. So what I'll say is, don't do single leg pedal drills inside or out. Yeah. If you do, it will probably cause more problems than it'll give you benefit. And we'll just leave it at that. The other thing I'll say is, remember when we used to think like pulling up on the backside of the pedal stroke was effective? I would encourage people to not do that. Meaning like pulling up, you want to pull through as we described, and it gets a little nuanced there, but when you start to like pull up, you start to pull your hip and you're generating force backward.
And
you can see it, like if you're riding with somebody, you can see that they're doing it and you can correct it easily like that. But don't like when you're doing some of these like muscle tensions and high cadence drills and stuff like that, focus on what Coach Charlie said. It's like start early, pedal through, and then end, and then get that leg out of the way. Don't pull up.
Adam, one more little thing about the pedal stroke and the hip flexor things. Mm-hmm. You remember, I think it was Greg LeMond who was one of the guys who kind of started talking about the bottom of the pedal stroke. You want to kind of scrape, you know, pull off your shoe.
Yeah.
Right? Or gum off your shoe or something like that. And, you know, that made sense because that, you know, he was talking about the area of the pedal stroke that I'm talking about that's important to follow through. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, and this is because a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about, Charlie. You're talking about, you know, the shoe thing and the gum. I said, well, if you're trying to get something off of your shoe, you're going to put your foot on the ground really, really hard, and then you're going to scrape back.
Yep.
If you do that in the pedal stroke, you've hit bottom.
Yep.
And so what I like to kind of have people say is instead of thinking about dragging your shoe, you know, kind of feeling that drag from the bottom, you're already hitting bottom. Think about having your heel come into the heel cup of your shoe.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to describe it.
Right. And so, you know, lead with the heel through that and you should never feel the bottom. There is no bottom. Right. Mm-hmm. If it's a circle, there's no bottom to a circle. You know, it's a continuum.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a you know, an important little note that I wanted to just kind of finish off with.
Yeah, and I would say that takes into account the dorsiflexion that we talked about as well in the pedaling technique.
Yeah.
So bringing your heel into the heel cup. I like that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the last point I will bring up is because we mentioned this, Charlie, too, because a lot of this was an inception when we were at training camp. Together when I saw you working with athletes both on and off the bike with just making these subtle changes to their pedal stroke. And so what I'll encourage everybody too, if you are like, huh, never even thought about the technique of pedaling in the way of doing something outside of an interval, I would encourage people to get with a coach. I mean, hire Charlie or, you know, get with a reputable professional coach in your area and just say, hey, let's go on a ride and see if there's anything that stands out to you. I mean, it's not a bad way to do it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. Whenever I've worked camps with CTS, there's always one, two, three, maybe a handful of athletes where I say, that person can leave here, this camp, with just a little bit of instruction and improve their cycling performance, or give them something to go home with and actually practice. Because, you know, we're remote based coaches. Mm-hmm. We don't get to ride with athletes that often, with our own athletes. It's a great opportunity for both the coach and an athlete to come to a camp and actually get in front of the coach and not just, you know, do the riding and, you know, all of the other benefits of coming to a camp. But it's the interaction, live interaction, where a coach can see what you're doing. It might be like a bike fit. And you're like, whoa, man, you really need to. And you don't see that when you're, no. you know, having your weekly calls with the athletes. So that's a great thing about camps and private camps with coaches and having a coach in general.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And obviously, shameless plug for a CTS camp. We have a whole camp offering. If our audience members didn't know, we do have tons of camps throughout the year in all different locations. The destination location in Mallorca, where Charlie and I was, that's a pretty unique one. Super cool. We also have local climbing camps, but all that is a, like I said, kind of a soft plug, but a very good one if you're interested in some of that on the bike technique driven coaching, which is invaluable in my opinion, because it only really takes once and then you go home with some valuable stuff to work on. So to wrap this thing up, Charlie, I'd say like my summary of all of this is work on the technique of pedaling. As Charlie described, then we train all cadences kind of within that spectrum of the low hill climb specific stuff down in the 60, 70, all the way up to the performance driven 90 to 100. And then some of that VO2 and sprinty 100 to 120. If you do that, I would say you are definitely on the right path of excellent technique with excellent, like, spectrum of cadence to have, like, to be the best cyclist that you can. Is there anything that you want to add to that summary?
Cycling is not just making power. You know, there's a lot of skills in cycling. And we're talking about one of them, which is cadence and pedaling. And improving your skills is going to make you a much better cyclist. And it's going to make it much more enjoyable, much more pain-free, less probabilities of injuries if you're doing the right cadences at the right times. And but having, you know, in the context of these two podcasts, having, like I said, that toolbox of cadence, all types of cadence, and being really comfortable with all of them is a huge benefit for cycling performance. Whether you're doing fondos or you know, group rides with your friends, or you're racing crits, or you're racing on the track, mountain biking, mountain bikers are the best pedalers in the world. That's all it means.
We didn't talk about it. I meant to put it in my notes and we didn't talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Let me just put this one in there, because
yeah,
there was a study way back in the day when I was working with Carmichael at the Olympic Training Center. And, you know, they were kind of compared track cyclists, mountain bikers, and road cyclists. And everybody thought that the track cyclists, yeah. Because remember, track cycling, you know, and what they found out was the mountain bikers had the best pedaling. In other words, they were making the best torque, and they have to, because they need torque on the ground, because you're, you know, you got loose dirt and you can't be like not producing torque and expect the bike to move forward.
In so many other like presentations I've given throughout camps at CTS and all this kind of stuff, I bring that up. I probably didn't bring it up because I was like, man, I talk about this all the time. But yeah, that infamous study where essentially they were looking at who were the best pedalers, and mountain bikers prevailed. I love mountain biking, so of course I'm going to let that be known. But yeah, I think that, I don't know. I've got a decent pedal stroke. I would thank the mountain bike as well as Dean Gollich for all that, because he's the one that like hammered in like all the knowledge and it's like, no, you got to try this. But then when you go mountain biking, yeah, you put yourself in an environment where you have to pedal well, otherwise you crash, you just fall over, you run into a tree, and you got to figure it out. So I guess the other thing to finally wrap this thing up is, yeah, this could be like start riding off road as a way to improve your pedal stroke. if you're curious, if you love being in the woods, and I would say there's some applicability to gravel riding and like under biking, which is when you take a, like a gravel bike and you ride on some single track and stuff. You start to develop those little necessities to remain in control of your bike at all different cadences. And we'd even go like super low, super high, half cranks, ratcheting, and all these other terms that we use in mountain biking, to navigate the trails. Go mountain biking.
All right.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, we're going to wrap this thing. So if people, you know, now that they've heard from you, if people want more Charlie, where do we find you? Are you on social media? Are you taking on clients right now? How do we get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm taking on clients. So, you know, you can contact CTS and, okay, and client services if you want to, you know, if you're interested in coaching with me. Yeah, I'm on social media. I don't post very much on social media, but I, you know, but I'm on there. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You know, it's Charlie Livermore on Facebook, and it's C Livermore on.
He's monitoring his socials, so you can reach out and say hi there, or drop an email at athleteservices@trainright.com, and you can get a hold of Charlie there. Also, I should say, in our previous podcast, we did say head on over to trainright.com/podcast, and that's where you can ask a training question of any kind. And you can, if you liked what you heard here and you have a few other things for either Charlie or I, feel free to click ask a training question, and that gets submitted directly to me. I'll get that over to Charlie. So with that said, I also included some really good articles and research that covers a lot of the stuff that Charlie and I went over. If you want further reading and learnings about cadence and optimal pedaling technique, head over to our show notes on trainright.com, and you'll find it all there, as well as the landing pages on whatever platform you listen to your podcast. So, Charlie, thank you so much. This is awesome. This is a really fun
pleasure, Adam. Series. Always a pleasure to work with you, Adam.
Yeah,
thank
likewise.
You very much. Yeah.
Likewise.
All right, man.
Take care. Thanks for joining us on the Time Crunch Cyclist Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want even more actionable training advice, head over to trainright.com/newsletter and subscribe to our free weekly publication. Each week, you'll get in-depth training content that goes beyond what we cover here on the podcast that'll help you take your training to the next level. That's all for now. Until next time, train hard, train smart, train right.